Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.ag. And for this week only, get a 110% sign-on bonus. 110% of your initial deposit by using code NEXTROUND. That's MyBookie.ag, code NEXTROUND. All right, Todd Furman is with us. BetTheBoardPodcast.com. BetTheBoardPodcast.com. I don't even know how to ask this question, but how much money, Furman, could I have made on Michael Penix going to the Falcons?
Prices widely fluctuated right around 20 to 25 to 1. So a little bit of surprise to say the least, but not even the biggest of what we saw in the first 15 picks. If you believe that the Raiders would use a top draft pick to pick a tight end for the second straight season, 60 to 1 the going rate on the Raiders' first pick in the draft being a tight end. So there were some money-making opportunities with those two of the bigger surprises given the way the draft fell over the first 15 picks.
All right, Furman, I hate laying that big number, but I told everybody over 4.5 quarterbacks is a lock. Now, when I told people that it was minus 340, it got as high as minus 500. How many people risked the big number and took the over 4.5 quarterbacks?
You start to see some money come that way, but the bigger play there was all about Bo Nix and his under. That's the one that really took some serious money. Didn't move as much on the screen in some of the forward-facing books, but a lot of the betting groups doing everything they could to bet his draft position under 32.5, thinking that was going to be the key cog. Michael Penix was kind of the outlier in all of that. I don't think a lot of people had him penciled in, not necessarily going that high, but weren't sure where he was going to fall. So you had a combination of factors, and that's the one thing with the draft. When you can identify one to two players and where they may go, it allows a number of other dominoes to fall into line and create some upside and opportunity. On the flip side to the quarterbacks going over the total, I think the one that dealt a blow to a lot of folks that laid a substantial price to go under was wide receivers at 6.5. It took the 49ers at pick 31, taking Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, and of course Carolina trading from 33 to 32 to take a wide receiver as well. So have to imagine there were a lot of folks sitting pretty at under 6.5 when you get to pick 31, only to see wide receiver go back to back.
I think I'm correct about this. That was the last two picks of the first round, and neither one of those guys were first team all SEC.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's pretty crazy.
It's wild when you look at it and some of the depth, and you try and figure out what the NFL draft scouts see compared to what these guys are contributing at the college level, almost along the same lines as Nick Saban's, I don't know if I call it criticism, but his characterization talking about Amarius Mims and some of the reservations he had about him being a first-round draft pick as well.
That was the nicest hatchet job I'd ever seen in my life. That was like smiling and apologizing for every cut he made. He was wiping the blood off of you as he was cutting you up. I want to ask you, which team do you think changed their win total the most in the first round? Was it the Bears? Because, I mean, the Bears addressed quarterback, and then they got a playmaker. I mean, I loved the Bears last night.
Yeah, I'm not sure it changed their win total a ton because everyone already had Caleb Williams being their starting quarterback built into that equation. And when you look at the way the draft was going to set up over the first top 10, it was just a question of how the Bears would go about it. Did they want to bring in a receiver? And when you look at the Bears' depth chart at the receiver position, I mean, Roan comes in and he'll be a third receiver most likely behind DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, at least right now. Keenan Allen, of course, on a much shorter term deal in terms of what remains there. So it's a Bears team that looks to be a little bit more dynamic offensively than they would have been before. But it's always interesting because when you look at some of these players that are available, more often than not, some of the mocks they're built into the win totals, I think if any team really helped their offensive prospects for the 2024 season, it's the Kansas City Chiefs, and they get the pick from the Buffalo Bills, who had been doing everything they can to bridge the gap and get closer to AFC supremacy, and now suddenly you give Xavier Worthy a chance to operate on the outside for a Chiefs offense that added Hollywood Brown this offseason. And suddenly when you look at the speed, potentially at the receiver position, barring a suspension of Rashee Rice, that receiving core looks a heck of a lot more dynamic on paper than what it did before.
Well, if you're the Bills trying to bridge a gap, Brown, sometimes you get so frustrated, you just blow up the damn bridge.
I guess so. The reaction is that the Chiefs got their Tyreek Hill back. And that feels like a bit of an overstatement for Xavier. I know he can fly, but Tyreek Hill does a lot of things.
True. I mean, it's always tough to replace that kind of talent on the field, given how explosive Tyreek is. I have to imagine, though, reading the characterizations and the scouting reports, that Xavier Worthy may be a better locker room guy and a better overall person than what the Chiefs and now the Dolphins have in Tyreek Hill, though.
No, I'll keep that person. Don't worry.
Yes. Drive by.
I'll keep that locker room person.
Furman, there's still a lot of guys that thought they were going to go last night. Kool-Aid McKinstry, Jazane Newton out of Illinois, Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. Have they A.D. Mitchell out of Texas? Have they reset the market on who will be the favorite to go off the board first tonight?
You know, a lot of books, they'll hang their draft props and they'll kind of keep some of those numbers there. They won't necessarily readjust them other than creating some unique opportunities that are there. So when you're looking for some of those marquee players that are out there, Cooper DeJean, to be a second round pick is a favorite right now. But what's interesting, if you believe that the Green Bay Packers, who were connected to him as potentially a first round match, that price is right around 5-1. Spencer Rattler to be drafted in the second round, a price tag right now widely available of +180. Blake Corum to be a second round draft pick at 3-1. And the one position that we haven't seen mentioned at all was the running back spot. But you did start to see money coming in the 48 hours leading up to the draft with Jonathan Brooks separating himself from Trey Benson in that particular market. Brooks had moved into that -$1.20 range. So we'll see if the talented running back from Texas recovering from that lower body injury will be the first running back selected in this year's draft.
Do you believe the Chargers were really shopping just Herbert at some point?
So we had heard rumblings of that about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and the Vikings were one team that was connected. Now, the Chargers shooting it down and saying, no, we were never serious about it. You know, you don't necessarily know what to believe, but there were overtures from Minnesota potentially figuring out what the package would look like, if it was going to be 2 first-round picks and then maybe a Justin Jefferson. And it made sense, at least on the surface, if Jim Harbaugh was as serious as he's been with all of that praise around J.J. McCarthy. And if the Chargers don't believe they can win now with a quarterback on a massive deal like that, then you can kind of reset the clock a little bit. But it doesn't sound like it progressed all that far. Just interesting fodder, and no doubt would have been one of the more seismic moments that we would have talked about in the draft. And ironically enough, we'll see how the Vikings like life with J.J. McCarthy, who will probably get to sit this year behind Sam Darnold unless things go haywire.
Todd Furman with us, BetTheBoardPodcast.com, BetTheBoardPodcast.com, at Todd Furman on Twitter is where you find him. He's with us on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline. After seeing 2 or 3 games, depending on the series you were watching, is there an NBA series where you have started to doubt your handicapping?
I won't say doubt the handicapping, but I think what's really opened my eyes a little bit is maybe the separation of talent between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Phoenix Suns. We see all the time everyone wants to gravitate towards the superstars, and for years that's been the way that you go out there and win NBA championships. But when you don't have anything past those superstars, it puts you in a little bit of a difficult spot. Now, I know the Suns haven't lost a game at home yet, so still very much in control of their own destiny if they're able to hold serve. And we've seen them get bet from a 2.5-point favorite out to 4.5. But if the Timberwolves are able to get a split in Phoenix, I think it speaks volumes about a young team that not many people necessarily believed in being able to knock off Phoenix the way that one was getting bet before the series started. And when we look at the Boston Celtics, I don't think Miami's going to really put a true scare into them, but awfully hard to trust this team when you look at the way they perform in the postseason. You know, big-time underachievers. I just think that they get a very favorable road in the East, and nobody will really truly be able to push them, whether it's the 76ers or Knicks, should one of those teams meet them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We know how good the Nuggets are, but they are the complete kryptonite for the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers have lost 13 consecutive games. LeBron James has more playoff starting experience combined with 285 playoff games than the entire roster of the Denver Nuggets, but they're down 0-3. And what could I have gotten for the Nuggets to sweep the Lakers?
Price won't be as outlandish as you think in that regard. I saw some shops in that +175, +180 range, because when you look at the way the series price opened, I mean, the Nuggets were more in that $5 to $6 range. Now, if you believe that the Nuggets would trail at halftime in two of those games and be able to come back and win in commanding fashion, a little bit of a different dynamic there. Of course, game two, the one that maybe broke the Lakers' spirit, but Denver just finds a way to wear this group down. And you look at Nikola Jokic, he is more than happy to take what the defense defense gives them. And, you know, sometimes if it's 8 or 9 points early on, they've just found a way to continue to come at Anthony Davis and make sure this Lakers team has nothing left in the tank when you get deep into the fourth quarter, or in the case of game three, the Nuggets really going into takeover mode in the third, showing incredible balance with all four of their five starters with 20 plus points. And it just speaks to how good this team is and why they're going to continue to be a force to be reckoned with in the Western Conference.
Your free play of the week is Roughnecks plus the 7.5 against the Stallions in the UFL. Go ahead and take that one. What'd you think of the Talladega finish? I know you're a big fan.
As someone who had Brad Keselowski at 15-1, I wish that the block had gone a little bit more seamlessly from Michael McDowell. And Brad had a chance to race to the flag at the end and kind of take that win. But credit to Tyler Reddick. I mean, he kept himself out of the mess all day long. And the one thing that I would like to see, and it's not just Talladega, we're starting to see the trend emerge at Daytona. It's really become a lot more of a fuel race. And so I think NASCAR has to figure out how to handle the stages, because a lot of these teams just not racing full throttle, so you don't see the same speed that we've grown accustomed to in the past. And it changes some of the excitement that you get. I know super speedway racing, and especially Talladega, has a prominent place on the schedule, and rightfully so, but it's one race, or two races, I should say, every year, gentlemen, that I watch, and I am thrilled that I do not have a ton of exposure from a betting standpoint. I'm more impressed that all of you guys were able to survive Talladega, and hopefully Taylor wasn't scarred doing a lot of your social media presence being on Talladega Boulevard.
I think she loved it. I think they the whole crew loved it out there. You had to laugh, though, when the Toyota cars timed it up so they could all be together, and then they wrecked themselves.
You know, the craziest part about that was the strategy was well-founded, and that's actually what gave Tyler Reddick the opportunity to go out there and win the race. He just didn't have his Toyota teammates out there to push with him. But Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones, and everybody else, not exactly what a Toyota Racing Development drew up when a lot of those guys find their day ending significantly earlier. And we hope that Eric Jones can return soon from that compression fracture in his lower back.
All right, he is Todd Furman, BetTheBoardPodcast.com, BetTheBoardPodcast.com, and at Todd Furman on Twitter. Thank you very much, Furman. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Enjoy the last couple days of the draft.
All right, buddy, you too. Furman with us on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline.